I want to welcome everyone to this architecture and API workshop for the OOR, the first of a series of workshops planned for the development of the architecture and API. It builds on a series of workshops that were discussing this issue and giving presentations. We felt it's now a point where we should begin actually making a decision about what this architecture and API should be.
Ken, you're very... Can
everyone introduce themselves?
Ken,
yes?
You're very soft and also sort of moving in and out from the mic. Is there something you can do?
Right into my mic.
Oh, now this is great. This is great. So if you stay...
Let's begin by having people introduce themselves. I'll start. I am Kenneth Lusk, as you know. I'm chairing this meeting. I'm a professor at Northeastern University at the College of Computer and Information Science. And I've been involved in the OOR since it was first started. We then asked, if I'd like to ask the other attendees to introduce themselves. Scott?
Hi, Scott Foley. I work at KBNSI, and Tim Darris needs to listen in on this meeting.
Oh, great. Yuri?
Hi, I'm just a self-employed computer programmer, and I follow this meeting because there's some stuff.
Where are you located?
Toronto.
Excuse me?
Toronto, Canada.
Right, Canada. Leo?
I'm Leo Albers from MITRE, here in McLean, Virginia.
Mike?
Hi, I'm Mike Bennett. I'm the editor of the Semantics Repository from the EDM Council. Just by way of a quick note, that's a not an OWL-based thing, but it uses ODM, Ontology Definition Metamorph. So I've been following these sessions in order to see how we can deal with shared ontology stuff, including our kind of format. So that's why I'm here.
Great. Okay, looking for people like that. Has anybody else come in since then? There's a list of a number of people we're expecting, like Dean, Tindar.
There should be one more person on the phone. I can see seven. Okay, then that's it. Yeah, seven people on the phone.
Who else is on the phone?
No, this is it.
This is a tool from Knowledge KBSI. I'm a senior developer here, and our interest in the Open Ontology Repository is basically we do a lot of work with ontologies and. We need a product like this for one of our projects, and that's where Tim Dart has asked myself and Scott Farley to listen on this meeting and then see how this product evolves over a period of time.
Okay, great. Right, so now the first thing we need to consider is, of course, what we'll have on the agenda. And if you go to the meeting page and go down to 20Q3, you can see that entry. See, the suggestion is that we work on, as you can see there, the OOR architecture, the OOR API, and also the organizing plan, how we are going to actually accomplish this objective of defining the architecture in the APA. So I'm not sure what order we should use for doing this. Any suggestions? Anyone?
Well, maybe just present the overall architecture picture, or would that be a good start?
Okay, we'll start with the architecture then. So let's move to the architecture. There is a link to the draft architecture. I call this the straw man architecture at 20PR. So if you move to that link, you'll see the architecture that we have been developing. So you'll notice that there are eight components in the architecture. All right. Is everybody on that page?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So let me run through these components, and we can then talk about the relevance it has for what you're doing in your particular projects. The starting from the upper left, the presentation component represents the essentially the GUI for interacting with the OOR. So that's just your, I think at the moment our sandbox for the OOR has a separate component for that, and that component is based on, programmed in Ruby on Rails. Okay, but we want to separate that particular component from the others so that the UI is not particularly, constrained to one particular language. Then, going over to the right, you see that the presentation uses the workflow. Now, the workflow has also been called the gatekeeper. This, our intention there is to have a component that would be it would represent the primary way in which one interacts with the OR for any modifications, any updates. In the simplest case, you can have a very simple kind of CRUD style interaction pattern where you simply do updates directly to to any of the artifacts you happen to have in your repository. Or you could have some more elaborate workflow in which updates would have to be approved prior to being made. It would depend on the particular instance of the OR to define their workflow using the using a business process language. So that's the workflow or gatekeeper component. The presentation also uses the find component, which represents just a search. This is just a read-only access to the repository.
Question. Can we, Ken?
Feel free to comment on any of these.
Yeah, do you want to us to ask questions as you go through them, or do you want us to wait till you have finished presenting the whole picture?
I think we should have this as interactive. And so if there are comments and issues with this architecture, definitely bring them up at this point.
Okay, I have a question about the workflow. So it's your workflow piece, a workflow engine or a policy engine or both? because you mentioned workflow and you mentioned gatekeeping. I would think of gatekeeping as sort of some sort of policy engine, and workflow as some sort of workflow engine. Which one is this? Or should that be two different components?
At the moment, it's regarded as the same component, that the two are closely related to each other. So policies are often expressed in terms of the in terms of workflows. You know, like for example, a policy would be, you know, you can't update, you can't add a new version of the data of a ontology until it's been approved by a certain individual. So that kind of policy is actually a workflow. So I'm not sure that you can really split those two apart, although in principle I suppose we could.
Or maybe we should label it as policy and workflow to just so that it's clear. Just a suggestion.
Right. That's in one version of the architecture, the presentation layer would not have direct access to the find component. It would in fact have to go through the workflow because the workflow would determine whether you have permission to access this particular artifact. So there's, as it's listed right now, policy is actually split between workflow and find.
Yeah, but by gatekeeping, I'm also thinking of things like access control, security, and so on, which may or may not be part of workflow.
The access security is kind of an overarching aspect. You kind of have to have an envelope around the entire system. So that, you know, if you split it up, it's not really going to work that well. So you really have to know who you are, you know, who you are and what role you play in order to get into the system at all.
Ken, so you're viewing workflow and or policy and workflow as a set of defined processes that will take you through the system depending upon perhaps your goal?
At the moment, it's defined in terms of your role. So you make a request for a certain service, and you, as a person who is in a particular role, it would then be determined, you know, where in the workflow you are, you know, how you're accomplishing that particular task.
Okay, so if you're a newbie and I don't know where the role is going to be defined, but let's say it was defined because it's your first login or something, then you would assign a role and based upon that take them through kind of the newbie process or set of processes.
Yeah, that would be the idea, that you'd have a kind of initial, you know, lowest level role, and then as individuals become more involved in the process, they would be promoted to other roles.
Okay, and the granularity of the roles, because one issue might be you're an advanced developer, you've already added ontologies and services. So you have, let's say, in a sense, an almost maximal role, and you come to the workflow session. Now, you only want to do specific things. How does it know, you know, what maybe you want to just do search and correlation or something like that, it would grant you the highest role that you currently have. Will it know then, you know, how to route you, or do you have to essentially pick and choose yourself?
That's an interesting idea. You know, you that gets into the API, exactly what the how we interact with a workflow engine. So you could actually come in a different role, even though you have a higher privilege. You could just wear a different hat if you wanted to.
And would that be based upon, well, I'm not sure. I mean, it seems like you would still have to choose which API you wanted then, because only you know what role you have on this session.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then another question about the workflow is that really workflow guides you through all these things, right? So federation and registration and finding and inference and persistence and administration. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's pretty much the front end to everything else. It would depend on the particular instance, of course. If you have a standards body like, I don't know, an ISO-like standards body, I would think you'd have fairly rigid and fairly, you know, complex roles. And roles and workflows. Not to get to, for a particular ontology to go through a series of approval stages. Whereas if you're just, you know, running your own personal repository for your own personal use, presumably you wouldn't need such an elaborate workflow, and you just take the default workflow where it just, you like have one role and you have one. Everybody can do anything.
Okay.
So the idea is we envision, you know, this to be, to address a concern that people had about the use of the OOR in these different settings. So do you see the idea there?
Yeah, it seems like the API, though, depending upon what it is, or the set of what it is, it's going to have itself built-in workflow, right? So any call, any specific call, you know, will essentially have a predefined process, what goes first and what comes after, and, you know, the whole cause-effect chain, right?
Right. Yeah, we have a series of use cases for the workflow already defined. There's a whole collection of use cases. And I don't have a link to that, but we have gone through a use case analysis.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I think I've seen probably most of them.
Yeah, they're fairly well defined, not just, you know, like a description of the use case, but also the whole sequence of steps that you go through in each of the use cases. And those, it was the use cases that motivated this architecture.
Okay, good.
It's one of the reasons why we started to put workflow and what we actually call the gatekeeper as kind of the main front end right after your presentation. You realize that anything that you'd be doing would be controlled by the policies that are in the workflow, implicit in the workflow. Hey, there is a question about whether policy should be just, I think workflow is perhaps a better way of looking at it because this does involve people and, you know, a series of actions rather than simply a, like some kind of condition or predicate that would determine whether an action can be performed.
Right, so you have some human sub-processes, for example. Not all automated.
It's not all automated. I mean, and one of the aspects of it is when an action would be performed by one person in one role, it could trigger then a notification of other people who are in other roles. So, you know, it's individuals that have to approve would then be informed, oh, you now have to approve this. You have 2 weeks to tell us your decision. And then, you know, when you get closer to the deadline, you get reminded, oh, you know, we would like to have a decision about this. See what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of policy is kind of hard to express in just a purely formal logic that doesn't take into consideration the timing behind all of this and the fact that different people are involved. But this is a common practice in business process modeling. So basically we just built our prototype system using, you know, tools that are available for business process modeling.
Sure.
So that's what we currently have right now. So the question is, should presentation link directly to find, or should it actually always go through workflow? That's one decision that needs to be made. Does anyone else have a comment about that?
I worked with workflows a little bit, and one of the issues with workflow is, I mean, even though it gives you the system integration, neutral language kind of process, it's still, the performance is not so good because it has to go through wrapping XML and converting it into and wrapping it with some other XML and so on, you know, converting it into SOAP message and the whole deal. So I was wondering if you're planning to code the entire process in the business process language, or would you have some pieces of, say, for example, Java code plugged into the people process? This way, what happens is your performance could improve a whole lot if you compare it with just XML-based workflows. So I was just wondering what was the plan like if you want to develop your own API that will do the find functionality or the persistence functionality, and the workflow will be just invoked in those that piece of code.
Well, the API is something we're going to look at in a moment. What we're currently doing is specifying the API both in Java as a Java interface and in Whistle.
Okay.
So it's pretty much neutral whether you do it all in Java or you do it, you know, behind a Whistle, you know, SOAP interface. You know, I think the advantage of having a Whistle is that you've specified your interface now in a way which is language independent.
Right. That, yes.
On the other hand, there is issues of performance, and if you wanted to just do it entirely in Java, that would be okay too, because it would also be specified in Java. think, right. Does that address this issue? Does it? Do you feel that addresses this?
To a certain extent, yes. But at this point, when I look at the works of peace, I think the policies are encoding the policies in a language neutral way, so that, or in a configurable way, is probably the best reason why the workflow piece would be required here. Because I don't know if you're planning to build, my assumption is you're planning to build each of these components. And it's not like somebody has built it and we're going to reuse it, so we have to integrate with external systems or something like that. So I guess, was policy your main reason for the workflow part, or do you have other reasons?
Policy was perhaps the main motivation for it, but in policy, by that I mean not just, you know, the policies for updating, but also policies for who has access, which turns out to be a really important aspect of this. I mean, individuals will be developing ontologies,
right,
in commercial settings, and they may not want, you know, these to be completely public. But they may want, for example, people to know that they exist. So you need some kind of, you know, policy to determine who has access.
Okay.
And the specification of a business process could either be in XML or in Java. Again, it's fairly straightforward to, we're going to be expressing these both in Java and in WSL, WSL and XML. So if you are concerned about performance, one can just, you know, do everything in Java.
May I know who was speaking just now?
What is it?
Who was speaking just now?
This is Atul KVSI.
Yep, thanks.
Okay, so let me go through the rest of these. And the one on the right, of course, is the key component. That's upper right is registrar. So that's where you register your ontologies or other artifacts. When we talk about the OOR, it's a registry and a repository. Some people feel that registry is the most important part, and that exact, you know, where the ontologies are actually stored is perhaps less important. Others feel that, you know, the actual storage as repository is also crucial. Anyway, the registrar has been separated then from the persistence part on the bottom, so that registration and storage are kept distinct. So you could, in principle, register something that isn't stored. And that might actually be a common practice. We don't know. Just below registrar is inference. This is perhaps the most, maybe the most problematic in terms of an API. There are just so many different languages out there, so many different ways of doing inference. So it's going to be a quite a task to come up with an API that makes sense and isn't kind of logical language or formal language dependent. Does anybody have any experience with working with something like this? I know there's a Powell API. And no? Okay. Well,
yeah, I mean, there's a number of, you could have an API that represents a common standard that people go through for, let's say, you know, description logic or something like that. But back in the old days, there was, something that was called generic frame protocol, and which became ontology, OKBT, ontology, what does it stand for?
Knowledge base?
Yeah, it was basically a knowledge base API. If you think of that, the old protege had a knowledge model which was based on that. This is mostly during the DARPA high performance knowledge base era. So there's been a number of those, and I actually came across something. I forget where I came across it, where somebody is now proposing another such thing.
Mm-hmm. That may be where we'll have to go, because just too many possibilities here, and we're not really in a position to come up with an API. But we're perhaps not the right group for it. We could just come up with a basic inference within the context of the repository.
And of course, think of Sparkle. Sparkle queries and some of the engines that have enhanced that, you may have the query intermixed with inference.
Exactly, and to the left we have find, and in the case of Sparkle, really that's the same thing as inference. However, when the find, okay, so moving over to the find module, find involves not just, finding within an ontology, but also finding an ontology. So it's at more than one level. So you have queries that can occur at the metadata level, where you're looking for, say, you're looking for a particular ontology that satisfies your needs. Well, that's actually rather different from asking, say, how many classes does this, or whatever, asking for a particular term within a particular ontology. So this find has multiple levels, and if you look at the API that we have right now, it's full of kind of ad hoc methods, for doing different kinds of query. It'd be nice if we could just come up with one very simple interface for this, such as say Sparkle, and allow it to be to do that at any of your levels. So in principle, it could handle everything with a fairly simple interface. That would be something that'd be really nice. But we can talk about that later. So it's the question, should we have a separate find and inference, or should find and inference really be the same?
Yeah, I mean, there may be a larger box around those two. I'm not sure. I mean, one comment here is that if you look back too at some of the work that was done with agent communication languages, so KQML, and the FIPA agent communication, ACL. A lot of those, they were kind of layered, right? So you had performative, like, you know, ask and tell. And a lot, so what I'm, the reason I'm bringing this up is that there may be a lot of overlap between kind of the things you want to do, partially workflow, but then how you actually, you know, structure the architecture here for that. So you they have performatives like ask and tell, which essentially are like assert and query, I mean, a query and assert. But other ones too, depending upon, you know, what your system was. But the way they were structured then, of course, was that you would provide some content, whatever you wanted to assert or whatever you wanted to query about, and then you would you could know the source that you wanted to do that with, or, you know, you may not. Given an agent architecture, you may just want to send it to the agents and let them find out. But then you could also do things such as, you know, in a sense, get back what you wanted in a certain format. And then, of course, a language that you were passing the assertions or the query in. Now that's obviously that's a, you know, a kind of vastly distributed view, and multiple granularity levels, if you will. But they did separate, you know, the performance that you intended from the thing that you were, the query that you were interested in, or the assertion that you were interested in telling, you know, asserting to some knowledge store, and you knew the language that you had. So, you know, that's kind of perhaps things that you might want to have in the API that surrounds these, I guess. One of the issues, of course, is that back in the agent communication language days, you didn't really know there may, and to some extent that's what you have in service, service-oriented architecture and web services these days. You don't necessarily know if there's only one service that can satisfy you, and therefore there may be multiple ways of doing things.
Well, I think that kind of, you know, when you start talking about ask and tell, that does get into this issue of granularity, which is down in the persistence level. Just how fine a granularity of object are we storing in the repository? The sandbox and, you know, and BioPortal, the granularity is clearly ontology. It's a whole ontology. It's not at the level of, say, an individual fact or assertion, which is a much finer granularity. So that is an issue. I mean, what is our level of granularity here, and what objects are we persisting? I think there's a whole issue right now that's being grappled with at various workshops about modularity of ontology modules. So that if there is a modularization going on of ontology, then of course you have an intermediate level between, you know, the full ontology and an individual assertion, but still you could view each of the modules presumably as being an ontology, you know, where you allow, say, import one ontology to import another. I think our attitude has been that the granularity is the ontology, or at least ontology module, and so you don't have a mechanism for simply for asserting, say, just one fact into your repository the way you might in some of these other systems. Does that make sense? I mean, is it reasonable to make that kind of restriction or assumption in an OR?
Well, I think it is now. It doesn't mean that you can't change only one thing in your module, right? It's just that you have to access the entire module and then put the entire module back.
That's right. It's kind of like a regular code repository. Sure, you can change one line of code, but then you have a whole new version.
Right. So I guess persistence here also includes versioning.
Yes, versioning. I should have said the unit is a version of an ontology.
Okay.
In the sandbox and in BioPortal, in the interface, it clearly distinguishes between the version and the ontology. So you can ask for an ontology, in which case I guess it'll give you the latest version, or you can ask for a version, a specific version of the ontology.
I think that in Protégé 4.1 and, out, which is incorporating a lot of out too, I guess standard practice is probably something like that, where you keep a version number, but if you're only interested in the ontology, you just get the most recent one.
Yeah.
So what's the tradition then with ontologies that have a lot of OWL imports from common federated material? You're saying that you can only choose to do a search on one specific self-contained ontology at a time and know what version you're searching and so on, or is there some support for finding terms that are imported from one ontology to another?
Well, clearly imports are important, and this gets in, and then you have questions of, if one ontology imports another, is it importing a specific version of the ontology, or is it just importing the latest version? In which case, updating an ontology would update anything that uses it.
Well, the OWL imports would be specifically between one OWL URI and another, so by definition of that having a URI, it would refer to a specific version of that, I would have thought. The version would be built into the URI string, wouldn't it?
No, actually. I mean, say I have an ontology that sits on my machine, I mean, I can update it anytime I want. It's still the same URI.
Oh, yes. That's what you mean.
So as it stands right now, there is no version control for import.
Right. Yeah, so the URI would essentially stand for latest rather than standing for a given version.
That's right.
Mm.
So this would add a feature that we don't currently have, the ability to import a version of an ontology.
So there'd be some dependency on the curation of any ontology that is referred to in an OWL imports.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue. I mean, in principle, you can update an ontology in a way which isn't backwardly compatible with the previous ontology, in which case you'll break anything that imports it.
Mm.
That's the case with software, certainly, and we would expect that with this as well.
I think that this model
is at the right level of granularity right now. But you know that there are, let's say, finer-grained proposals out there. You know, I'm thinking of like E or epsilon connections, which some people use, but really it's not a standard per se. So you may be able to do things at much finer level granularity, especially when you're establishing, rather than imports, you're establishing linkages between individual classes or sets of classes in one ontology and then in another. That you know, you could think of those as modules, at least right now, but they may not really be.
I'm not sure what those connections are. I mean, if you had, for example, a same as between a term in your ontology and the term that is in an imported ontology, would that be the kind of thing you're talking about, that kind of linkage?
Well, import, you may, at least in my understanding, you may not even have to import the ontology. You essentially create these mappings into an ontology that you're not importing. When you import the ontology, at least now, you know, you get the full set of entailments, which you may not want. So, but I, you know, from my perspective, I guess right now, since we're focused on OWL primarily, and then somewhat too on common logic, then we essentially have to use what's, you know, what's the dominant ways of doing things in those languages.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're doing. Yeah, you could certainly have a refer to a URI within an ontology that doesn't happen to be anything that was otherwise declared in the ontology. In fact, this is an interesting question. That, I mean, what is in the ontology? The way it stands with something like OWL, or, you know, or RDF in general, the ontology consists of triples. You don't actually say this is in, you know, this particular URI represents something in my ontology. You just say this triple is in the ontology, right? The only way that you would be able to say that something was in your ontology would be if it happened to be in the namespace.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of circumscribing a set of, you know, IRIs, I guess.
You see the difficulty here. I mean, you know, technically, if you just think of it in terms of triples, you know, these triples could refer to URIs that are all over the place, and they don't have to be in a single namespace. They don't have to be anywhere in particular.
No, I agree, and probably at least at that interpretation, the triple is probably the primary unit, right?
So that's the way it works in RDF, yeah, and therefore now.
Which means that, you know, if you, but that's probably a level of granularity that you don't maybe necessarily want to support, right? You don't want triple level persistence and access. For change, perhaps. So I understand that this is a complicated issue.
Right. I think I bring it up only because if you start looking at the API that we have, it does seem to have this implicit suggestion that, you know, you do have entities in the ontology as well as statements, you know, both the triples and the entities. But, you know, that's not something that we would particularly want to support, so it's a question about whether we want to support that kind of API.
Yep.
Well, when we get to the API, you know, that's going to be an issue that we're going to have to look at. Anyway, so I think, is it generally agreed then that the unit of persistence is a version of an ontology where an ontology can import other ontologies, so it's technically an ontology module. Is that agreeable to everybody?
Yeah, I think so, at least with me right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we pretty much answered that question. I think it's, all right, so then I think I've run through
question,
everything in the
question. Can we hold one more discussion? I mean, would it be more appropriate if we at least have one level of layer that allows at least a module, the notion of a module versus an ontology that is comprised of modules, at least one layer of hierarchy. Otherwise, if it's all flat, then I think it will be difficult for us, I mean, at a later point, to really make a difference between, let's say, a module versus a full ontology that is made up of modules.
I would agree with that. I would say that, for example, for EDM Council work, that is necessarily modular, and we refer explicitly to modules from other sources within the repository anyway. So in order to even put it in the OOR, we would have to have some support for modularity.
Yeah, because with at least one layer, then we could restrict at a later point whether or not we allow nesting and so on and so forth. But if we don't have that one layer, it will be difficult.
So the proposal is to have a layer of, what are the two layers?
Total of two. I mean, one parent and child, one parent and child relationship.
You have ontology and you have module?
Right.
Is that the?
I would suggest that. Yeah.
Am I capturing that?
Where are you capturing?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So an ontology would be kind of like a collection of modules. It would be. You specify an ontology by specifying modules.
It could be, or it may be not. I mean, it may just be something on its own. But at least we allow that. Maybe it could be itself. I mean, an ontology is an ontology module.
It's because there's a naming issue there, because what we're thinking of as modules here would mostly, in OWL, be defined as individual OWL ontologies, but they would be modules of an ontology, So there's a naming difficulty.
Yeah, and it's more than OWL.
This is going to be dependent on the language, right? So common logic, I think what Michael Gruninger's group and Cora are doing are basically defining modules too.
Yeah.
But it may be whatever the language directly supports. You can define too, I think, module and ontology at this point, and let them define whatever the language defines in terms of those, but there may be more or less in depending on the language.
Yeah, I think the problem is that what we're calling an ontology, for many of us, in terms of just general language independence definition of what we call an ontology, and then in the whole language, as a thing in our code and ontology, which we might be thinking of as a module. So we need to be clear about the language there, I think.
Yeah, I think we need to come up with terms for this that are hopefully independent of the particular representation language. That would be helpful.
Yeah, I do remember Michael Gruninger mentioning that he is not going to go any more granular than a module. So the module is the sort of most basic addressable unit.
Actually, module version.
Right, and yeah, then we start to track versions and everything. I mean, at the module level.
And then, but then you can have groups of modules that form, sort of put together a collection of modules, kind of like a software configuration.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So would configuration be a term that we could use?
What? I missed that. What was that?
There's a concept in software called a configuration.
Configuration or you know, package, I guess, is some includes some sense of a module too.
Yeah, there are other terms are used for it as well. But package is not the same notion. Package is a an aggregation. Where
that it's really not the same. I understand, but
When I say configuration, I would say, you know, you have this collection of modules or whatever entities you have, and then you can then say, okay, I want these entities to be this configuration and the other entities to be this other configuration, and they can overlap one another. So the same entity can be in any number of configurations.
Configuration is not the same as package.
Right.
Configuration, you can say, well, they exclude this and include that and exclude that and include that, possibly describing them as a package level to make up the configuration.
Right. So I think configuration idea is one that kind of matches what we're looking for here. And, you know, it could get kind of elaborate where you could say, you know, I need this module, and I can take any one of these versions, but it has to be one of these versions. So I can have at least this number. That's a typical one. I have to have at least this. You know, it can't be an older version. But, you know, you only have one of them. You want to pick one of the modules in this version sequence. And that's the kind of thing that you get for configuration.
Yes, so the concept of configuration is very distinct from the concept of module or package, which are essentially synonymous.
The module package?
The package.
I think a package as being more, you know, a grouping of modules, but a module can only be within one package.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what we want. I don't think so. But what do you? Does anybody else have a thought about this? I mean, does it make sense to group these modules in a way that a particular module can only be within one package or one of these groups?
It would depend on the level of granularity of the module and the capabilities it's providing. Hi, Dan, this is Todd. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, Todd, you made it.
Yes. So when you're talking about package, Ken, I would think of a package as providing some grouping of capabilities that are somehow related.
Well, I wasn't using it. So specifically, I was just looking at it from the point of view of, is it, I mean, I think of package as being an aggregation operation.
Yes.
Where the entities within can only be within one package.
Mm-hmm.
Most whereas, programming languages force that, yes.
Yes.
That's consistent with UML as well.
Yes. Whereas when you talk about a configuration, that's much more flexible. So it's you know, a particular module can be in any number of configurations. The configuration is usually for a particular purpose. And you just select various modules that, you know, are needed for this purpose.
Are you thinking of a configuration sort of like a deployment?
Yeah, kind of like a deployment.
Okay.
So what are we looking at here? Do we want to have a package notion, or do we want to have a configuration notion?
Configuration of what?
Of ontology modules.
So what were our choices? One was configuration, the other was?
Package.
You can't have configuration without package.
The configuration would allow you to put whatever packages in you want. And this is specifically to segregate the various dependencies on particular representation languages? I mean, that's one of the primary goals of OOR is to be able to support the various languages. Whether it's
right, right. But what I'm looking at here is just what is the granularity of persistence and registration.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. That's okay. I'm late to the point.
We're just looking at the granularity issue. And we could just have flat ontology modules with versioning. Or we could have some layer above that.
So
we have some kind of grouping, and then the question is, what kind of grouping would that be?
So you want to register an ontology. Ontology is in a particular representation language. So does the registration process entail use of any of the particulars of a registration language?
Registration language?
Well, I'm sorry, the representation language.
Representation language.
Oh, okay, well, registration language. The representation language. So if I have an ontology in common logic and I want to register it in OOR, just for the registration process, are there any dependencies that we envision on the representation language at common logic and taking instance energy storage? Or is this strictly sort of an anonymous or a non-dependent process that is dependent on the representation language? So.
But that would be a discussion we are going to make in 2 weeks' time when we talk about metadata.
I'm not getting your metadata yet. I have this file. It's a representation of something in common logic or X logic or OWL or something, and I want to register it in the OOR. Now, certainly as part of the metadata, I would have to state, well, it's in one of those representation languages, but for the registration process itself, do I have, or would there be any dependencies on that representation language?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to have such dependency.
Excellent.
Mm. Now, the question we're discussing at the moment is where you have ontologies that themselves have dependence on other ontologies and how we deal with that relationship, which I think is a separate question from the representation language.
Yes. Well, I was trying to understand the dependencies of the registration process with the particulars of the representation language.
Mm.
Now, what you're saying is that the ontology itself could have dependencies on other ontologies.
Correct.
And you want that dependency capability. I guess that really does require the process or the registration process to be involved in, I guess, you know. Damn. Oh well.
I could have a particular representation, and the question is whether we just interact the same modules or whether also configurations of combinations of modules are of importance.
I would probably say yes, depending on how much capability you really want to put in there, and also to support the ability to extend capabilities. So maybe some initial development of a real OOR would not have the ability to check for these dependencies and or enforce consequences for not properly stating the dependencies. or like capabilities to examine the dependencies and see if everything is consistent. So you could add on those capabilities and make them more robust as you move along, in which case you want to have some decoupling there. Or decoupling.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the immediate problem is with things like, for example, the EDM Council thing, that to submit the whole thing, we need to also submit the fact that it has dependencies on a dozen other ontologies or modules, some of them the 5 from other standards groups or other ontology authors.
Yeah.
So we'd have to, that would have to be supported in order to be able to submit that ontology at all.
Well, that could be one way to do it, and at some point that's probably what you need to do. But exactly what that entails is not, I'm not exactly clear on. So
yeah, I guess the quick description of the thing is that if we take just the content that we've developed, absolutely nothing is a child of our thing, because we define things in terms of broader ontologies that are out there.
Right. Well, I guess at some point you want to be able to check to make sure that those ontologies are out there and they can be found. You want to do then some consistency checking, perhaps as a separate process.
But yes, copies.
I think the registration capability or module, or I'm sorry, Ken, what are you calling a package, has to be configurable with various modules to support the various functionalities and the degree and or the degree of consequence management that you want to enforce or not enforce. I'm into absolutely late binding at all, and it'll pop up if you can do it. Sometimes it becomes too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we do go the configuration route, that itself could be automated to some extent, or it could have its own policy management, if you really want to get elaborate, as opposed to just a flat file somewhere.
Right. The one thing that I pointed out, I guess, before you came in was that currently the import mechanisms that you have in languages like ELM don't specify a version.
We all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this would actually add a feature that these languages don't have. The ability to specify constraints on the version that it's imported.
That's the version of OWL or the version of the ontology?
Version of the ontology.
Okay.
Mm.
And right now you just import a URI.
Yeah.
You know, and whoever has control of that ontology can update it freely anytime they want, and, you know, the importer doesn't have any control over that.
They're not following the explicitness principle.
What?
They're not following the explicitness principle.
What's that principle?
It says you have to make everything explicit, so in particular your versioning and all sorts of other things, but then you have to decide how explicit you want to be about everything. You can get into representing the context of the versioning and the organizational context and blah, 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 blah. But even just simple things like versioning should definitely be there.
Yeah, versioning changes things quite a bit. I mean, now in principle, every URI that we specify could have a version associated with it. Because the URI is within a context of, usually within a context of an ontology, and that ontology in turn has a version.
And some curators will have put that version in the URI, and some curators will not.
Correct.
Right.
Right, right. So it would be nice if there was a consistent way that we could specify that, so that, you know.
I mean, the broader problem here, which is worth parking for later, which is that there's a number of things which OWL simply doesn't do, but which are worth knowing about an ontology, and many of them we've had to add or deal with. So there's a case for a kind of extended meta model of the things about an ontology that OWL doesn't have constructs for, of which we may only be interested in that one, but many of the submitters of ontologies will have additional meta terms as well. So park that for later. That might be worth thinking about.
Yeah, well, it would be nice to. It seems to me that one can augment any of these ontologies, and that's how you could use, for example, the configuration notion. For that, you take the basic ONB, say, and then you say, well, that's not quite good enough. Let's add something else to it.
Mm. And many of them will be augmented as well, which could be interesting.
Take your what?
Many of them will be augmented as well with additional terms, so that could be interesting.
Right.
But as you say, that's maybe a distraction from what we're looking at now, but it's just sort of an opportunity now.
All right, so but I think we still left a little hanging some of the questions.
I'm not sure we're going to be able to resolve them all, but one thought, too, is that this is probably closely correlated with the metadata, right? So the metadata, in a sense, is projected from whatever the meta model we currently have is. And therefore, if we decide to have a configuration or a module or version or whatever, it's probably has to be reflected in that metadata, which means, you know, extending the metadata schema, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, hold on, Leo, I thought the configuration issue had to do with the organization of how the registration process would work as opposed to something about the metadata.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you introduce a notion such as configuration, right, that's metadata. It's going to be associated with a configuration.
Configuration of what, though?
Well, that's what I mean. It depends on what that actually turns out to be.
Well, so
if you have a configuration of, you know, I have, again, whatever the level of granularity, let's say I have Ontology A version 1. I have Ontology 2, but only Module 3 version 4. Whatever that is, that is going to define a configuration that you're going to use for some purpose. Right, so if you do that, you're defining, again, a configuration which could be tagged as this is, you know, Todd's configuration 1.
But hold up. Is that the configuration of the registration process, or is that configuration of ontologies in relationship to themselves?
It's not necessarily registration. Let's say if you want to do... it's farther downstream in the workflow. So, assuming that you already have ontologies out there, you may want to, you know, define a configuration, and then add something new to that configuration or add your ontology to that configuration.
Okay, so this is configuration about ontologies. That would have to be part of the metadata, correct?
I'm just suggesting that anything we come up with here, you know, whether it's a configuration package, that's going to have to be reflected in the metadata. So we're going to have to extend whatever our current metadata schema is.
Okay, well, then that would argue for the fact that this registration process has to be composable to some extent, and therefore it itself, that is the registration process, requires a configuration capability.
It seems like it might, that might be the case, right?
Okay. So, what's I'm sorry.
The problem is with being too flexible is that we might have difficulty federating that.
Yeah. Yep.
So certain capabilities may be provided by one instance and not by others.
That's right. So we'd like to have a certain minimal level of capability so that they can federate.
Yeah, so I think
that they're free to extend.
Yeah. And this is, you know, if we go back to policy, your federation or your instance of the OOR may have a different policy. And so you could state what your policy is about configurations.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's just part of the explicitness principle. Just put it out there. Then people can
understand. And then you can state that you can only federate with those instances that have that level, that have those features.
Yeah.
Yeah, so or you tolerate what the result is or something, right?
Exactly.
Or,
right.
Yeah.
The decision has to be made. We're not assuming that federation process would be automatic, would it? Are we?
Well,
we haven't talked about federation yet. So why don't we move over to the federation module now?
Ken, before you do that, what's been decided about the registration module or registration thing? anyone written this down? Any decisions that were made?
I don't know. Peter, have you written anything down about this discussion?
Do you mean?
Is anything being recorded?
It is being recorded audially.
We have an audio recording. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not taking notes, if that's
right.
Your question.
We have an audio recording.
Right.
Really, very little was said about registration. Until you have a good feeling of what the granularity is, you can't really talk about registration. So we moved on to granularity fairly quickly.
Okay.
And we made did we make a decision, or we floated a decision about having more than one layer of granularity of parent-child relationship that would support modules? I think we said a yes to that before, to the configuration question.
Yeah, I think we want ontology and we want module of an ontology. Version, again, is kind of a third thing.
But I think 90% of the registration conversation would probably be at the metadata. I mean, could be taken care of at the metadata session.
Okay.
I think, at least.
It sounds like everyone's agreed to, if you're going to register ontology, you do have to register associated metadata. The basis for that metadata will initially be the OMV.
Yes.
An extended set that builds up from OMV.
Okay, well, that's right. The basis anyway. And then, per Leo's suggestion, that there may have to be this extension for the ability to register a configuration of ontologies. That's something
yes.
In the future.
Yeah, I think
You know, I guess that's a thing we have to decide at a certain point, but maybe not today.
Okay. So there's at least two responsibilities for the registrar. Have we gotten to the point of identifying the method call names?
No, we haven't gotten to API yet.
I didn't say that far. I just said the names.
Not that either.
Oh, okay. Did you want to work on that, or did you want to move over to the next part that you had mentioned, Ken?
Okay, just wanted to get through the rest of the module. There's federation and administration that I haven't looked at.
Okay.
And the issue of federation is it an automatic process, or is it something that is performed somehow less automatically?
Of course, I think we'd like it to be automatic, but initially I suspect it will have to be manual. Because some of the issues that have just been raised, that is, different instances of ORs may have different capabilities, and you may not want to federate with one that has lesser capabilities, or you may be willing to tolerate that, as Leo suggested. But right now, I don't think we should try and develop that as an automated capability. However, we'd like to make that the possibility available in the future.
Yeah, I mean, one thought here is that in your confederation process, you can define pragmas, right? So saying, you know, and pragmas meaning this is kind of the policy for of confederation that you want for your confederation. You know, it's got to be our language. It's got to, you know, whatever your conditions are. That'll help the automation process. But it also make more explicit, even if it's not automated,
yeah,
what your conditions of federation are, and that would be useful for you.
Well, for any user of that OOR, so they understand what they might be getting into, but yes.
Yes.
Now, I mean, one of the reasons to make things automatic is this: our instance is very dynamic. I would hope that the instances of OORs are not that dynamic. But I think Leo's suggestion is actually on the mark, in that you have to make this information available to anyone using the OOR, and hence the basis to support the automation in the future when we can find the manpower to develop it.
Well, to some extent, one can automate it through the workflow engine. One can just have a workflow for federation. In fact, that's how it's organized right now. Federation uses the workflow engine.
Okay.
So federation just becomes kind of it's just another form of workflow, except that it comes through an automated mechanism versus a UI mechanism.
I guess I was
in fact, if you look there, you'll see the only two modules that use workflow are presentation and federation.
I guess I was thinking of the details of actually building the thing. If you have to drill through firewalls and get your ports right and all that sort of stuff.
Federation is a real difficult task.
So that's why
I can't tell you what went on in the last 2 days. I was chairing an NIH panel, and believe it or not, this issue came up. Not for ontology, but the issue of kind of federation.
Yeah, it's not trivial.
In fact, what is to give you a feeling for this? There are groups that have been working on this for 20 years. Not made significant progress.
Well, I have to say they're probably doing something wrong then. There are products
out
there.
I think so.
Yeah, there are products out there that automatically federate. Air Force has some, for instance. It's certainly a non-trivial process, and it requires a lot of people and man hours to get it to work, but it's doable.
Oh, no, it's definitely doable. I think to some degree the problem isn't that people don't want it. They certainly want it. It's very important. It's that when you submit a grant proposal, it's very hard to get that funded because it looks
hard.
So uninnovative.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not interesting, We're not gonna talk about it.
And we might also look at the experience of the Finnish group, right, who's actually trying to develop a kind of Federation API.
No.
So maybe that's something we can, address with them and find out their experiences, because they may have gone through this path already.
Well, we have a slight advantage over that in these other efforts, in that we can declare an API, a whistle API, and we can require that all OOR instances must conform to that federation API.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily require that each of the federates have the same capabilities, does it? I mean, I guess you could
build
that into the API.
We have to have a certain minimal capability that all OOR is satisfying.
Right, but in terms of, project planning, I think that's something that could be delayed or deferred in terms of automating it.
All right, we can delay that. What I'm saying is that we have the advantage over these other groups that have been testing to federate, in that the various federates, once they would like to federate, use a vast or a huge variety of techniques for, making their information available. And it's that diversity that makes federation almost impossible.
Called lack of interoperability, yes.
It's total lack of, they just have so many different idiosyncratic ways of getting this thing, like all the way from, you can get the data if you send email to somebody, and they'll send you an attachment pack.
Sound familiar, Leo?
Yes, it does, certainly.
That's the kind of thing. It would be really hard to automate that.
Have your people contact my people.
Right. I think we can do better than that, and if we have sort of a minimal requirement, then federation has been much more reasonable. It's still a difficult task, but I think it's now doable.
I think the first step in that is, as Leo suggested, that we have to have a way to make explicit the capabilities that are being provided by a particular instance.
Right. And I guess that comes down to the administration.
Well, and or the configuration of the deployment instance.
Okay. I think that has to be made explicit in something that you can query.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
so, I mean,
that's not usually the case. Deployment parameters aren't necessarily available outside of the service.
Well, I guess I was thinking the deployment parameters are what can, or the configuration of the deployment is what tells you about the capabilities that are available. Now, the, how much of the deployment details you want to put out is something else.
Well, we would have certain... Yeah, well, we don't need all the deployment details, but we do need certain deployment details. And the question is, where does that go? And I would say administration seems like the natural place to put it, administrative module.
Or if this information is being used for Federation, does Federation call the administration module to get that information that it's going to make public?
Yes, it does. In fact, you see, the Federation uses administration. Are you looking at the architecture?
No, my screen went blank, and my cat's on that app, so I can't open it up again.
The Federation uses administration.
Okay.
And administration is also used by workflow.
For access control?
No, that doesn't seem to be what it's... I'm not sure exactly how this works. There was a question then about exactly where policy lies, and it would seem like it's policy is in the workflow engine, because policy is so often a is so often connected with workflow. But then there's access. There is issues of, you know, who has access to the information.
Well, that's part of policy, or we could put it there.
And it's part of policy, except that. At the moment, presentation goes directly to find, and there doesn't seem to be any way of having a policy enforcement because find doesn't have policy.
So presentation is not connected to administration?
Presentation is not connected to administration. And that's true of the sandbox right now. The sandbox has a UI, it has an admin, and then everything else is in the core.
Oh.
So it has three modules. So basically, in the sandbox, we have a equivalent of a presentation module, an administration module, and then a core that consists of everything else. So all the Federation and implicit workflows, registration, all the search, inference, and persistence are all in that last module.
I had a question regarding the find persistence and the, I guess it relates to find persistence and the registration module. I'm not sure if it was, if it has already been answered. But from what I understand, the OR will be used by two sets of users. So one would be ontology providers and the other set would be ontology consumers. The question is, the ontology consumers could speak different languages, and so can the ontology providers. So do we have any mediation capability inside the sandbox where you would translate the information from one language to another and store it internally so that when an ontology consumer is trying to search or find information, you can map it to the right internal format that you have. Is there any sort of data normalization that's going to happen inside? Because people can speak different languages here. I'm not sure if I made it very clear.
Several of the ontology repositories, you know, focus on that particular issue of transforming from one representation language to another representation language.
Right.
I don't think we want to get anywhere near that.
I don't think that's really an issue for us.
The question about the find, I think there's different levels, like a granularity of find.
Todd, let's see if we can finish this question.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think the answer is that the capabilities of a particular OOR instance will define what languages it supports.
Okay.
And if it does support multiple languages, then you can request an ontology in any one of these languages, and the providers can provide it in any one of the languages, and it's the OOR instance's responsibility to translate between them.
Okay.
Well, Ken?
Okay, is that clear?
Yes. In the initial version of the OOR, we may not have that capability. Would that be a good assumption?
Yeah, I think at the moment it's pretty limited. It does. It has, for instance, both OVO and OWL. So if we take OVO, OVO ontologies would be translated into OWL.
Okay.
Although I don't know how good a translation it is. But, you know, it does do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Todd?
Question, why do you want to translate ontologies? Or I should say, why do we want the OOR to do that translation?
It's not really so much the OOR, it's just some instances we'll be doing it.
Okay.
It's not really, I don't know that we really need to specify that in our API.
Okay. I just want to make
sort
sure.
Of an add-on feature that the instances will have.
Okay. And is that necessary? Is that a necessary capability for any of the find functions that we've thought about? Thought of? I would think the initial there's different levels of granularity of find. In that, a consumer can go and ask a general question: find me something about microphones or something or sound systems. And the find process at that point would just look through metadata and provide some results across all the modules or across all the ontologies in any language that the OOR currently has or federates have. And then once one or more of the ontologies is of interest to the consumer, they could then drill down into particular ontologies or a particular language. So that is, there are several parameters that impact find. And if you want to move from the general to the specific, and we'll follow that sort of paradigm, then I don't see a need for any sort of translation, or am I missing something? And then, again, this is in the context of the find process, the process of ease.
Yeah, I don't see that this would be part of our API.
Okay.
A particular instance may offer that as a feature.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, one issue here is that somebody may want to provide a service that translates from, let's say, you know, PsycL to Common Logic. And therefore, you know, they want to register that service and, you know, and then people that want a translation doesn't exist, then they could find that and invoke it.
Ooh, Leo, you just brought up an ugly problem.
Yeah, I just typed out a line on the chat. So just as a reminder. So maybe we should, I mean, I wish they were here, but we should still ping the Bremen folks. If you remember their presentation, actually they have a whole piece of work that's doing exactly that in real time even. So whether what?
Doing what?
Translation between Common Logic and OWL.
Oh, the high-tech paper.
Yeah, if you go back, I mean, we had that recorded. You remember the session when they had to almost in real time upload their video to YouTube so that we could all share it and so on.
Yeah, this is Hetz and Castle, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
Hetz using Castle, yeah.
I think that's real great work, but I don't think the OOR should be...
No, I mean, not that, but rather, I mean, ask them whether anything they are doing would have repercussions, I mean, on our API. Maybe they will have some suggestion, maybe not.
Yeah, that's something we should probably...
Yeah, I mean, that's the point.
I'll have to inquire with them.
Yeah.
To see if they have any thoughts.
Input on the API, not... I mean, the surface is totally external. I mean, whether whatever they do, they have suggestions for the API, that would make it easier to integrate.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess mappings probably go in there too somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah.
Mappings are, okay. So along with configuration, we also have mapping. I didn't want to talk about that, but.
So mappings are among the same representation language? Translations go across languages, correct?
Mapping is just another entity you can register.
Yeah, but the mappings act on ontologies in the same representation languages.
Seems like it has to be a precondition.
Well, that's the only way I've ever heard them discussed, but then translation is going to go across languages.
Yeah, normally mappings are within the same language.
Okay.
And translations are across languages.
Yeah, and if you wanted to map to an ontology in another language, you'd have to translate first and then map.
Right. Okay.
Right. So the last module is administration, and that's, I mean, if you look at the architecture right now, it's not clear that really makes sense. Administration uses persistence, and it's used by the workflow and federation. I don't think that's what's going on in, certainly not the way the sandbox works right now. Administration is basically just another UI. Another way of interacting with a system that has certain privileges and, you know, and functionality that presentation doesn't have. So it's a little unclear that we have defined administration properly.
Well, administration requires both a presentation and a role, right?
But a set
of capabilities. So it really does have its own presentation, whatever it is. But it's role based, and of course it has its own workflow.
Okay, to the extent that you could express what you're doing in terms of a workflow, it's not administration.
Ah.
Administration is more concerned with the just kind of the, you know, like the deployment and just the sysadmin type aspects of the instance. Like, for example, how often are you going to be polling a particular federate? But then again, that could be just a regular workflow aspect. I don't know. I think the way administration works right now, it's really like a sysadmin thing. It's not clear that we even need such a module, because I would think each particular instance would have their own deployment mechanism, and therefore their own sysadmin approach.
Well, insofar as there's being a member of Federate, a member of the Federation, there may be some, you know, basic sets of administration responsibilities that, that every Federate has, right?
Well, that's really kind of the, I think that was the main reason it was put in there, was for something, that was something that the Federates would use. Right. So the individual Federates would need, kind of a low-level administrative access capability. So they would,
and so it seems like it's the same kind of thing. It's, you know, it's part policy. It's like having root capability or something, right? You have full control over everything, but you have a policy that you have to follow because you're a Federate, which means that there's at least minimal workflow that has to be followed, and you have to have a certain role.
Right. So if the only purpose of the administration is for Federation, then we really don't need an administration module, just the Federation module. What else would the administration do?
Users, or is that somewhere else?
Anything that you would have a workflow associated with, that would be part of, that would be done through presentation of the workflow modules.
Say again?
Whenever you have a workflow, right, something that, you know, you're going to be doing.
Right.
That's already handled by the presentation and workflow modules.
Okay, so how do registers, how do users register themselves to the OOR?
That's one of the workflows.
Hmm.
Registration is a, becoming a user is a registration process. I mean, it's a workflow process.
Well, yeah, I don't doubt that, but most of our systems look at it as part of administration.
What we're saying is administration is a one type of workflow.
Okay. That's fine. It certainly is.
Okay.
If we keep thinking along those lines, then almost everything else is a workflow too. And I guess I misunderstood the intent of having this workflow module. I thought that was an ability to piece together different processes of a smaller granularity to allow support a larger granularity of process.
No, it's a little bit broader than that. It includes basically all the policies associated with your instance. So the idea is that basically everything that you'd want to do has to be through a workflow. It can be a really simple workflow, you know, but it's a workflow nevertheless.
No, yeah, I don't doubt that, but I think it's some of the responsibilities of the various parts of a workflow that need to be segregated out clearly, as opposed to just calling them all part of workflow.
Well, the units, basic tasks of the workflow are handled through the find, register, and inference modules?
Well, the inference and the find were, I think, initially I was thinking they were segregated out because of their dependencies on representation languages.
Oh.
And in persistence, similarly, may have that attribute or that quality about it. People may want to use different persistence mechanisms for different languages.
Yeah, that's fine. The workflow would be independent of that.
Hopefully, yeah.
But it would nevertheless, you know, the individual tasks that are performed within a workflow are done through the registrar and registrar find persistence. Right?
I'm going to have to think about that one, Ken.
Because the workflow itself is just saying, you know, we have this sequence of tasks that are to be performed.
And where do those tasks come from?
You specify workflow as a business process?
Right. But I guess I'm getting at it. So you have a task that's specified as a business process. The business process has to use interfaces from
moment, it's the registrar, find, and persistence modules.
So there's no interfaces to whatever might be called administration, say, for registering a user or changing the permissions on a user.
Those are workflows. So you have a workflow for registering a user, a workflow for...
Right. But then that workflow has to be composed of some smaller pieces, correct?
Correct.
You know, all of those smaller pieces, whether it's the UI to add a user to the database or take them out, is all part of workflow also?
Yes, yes. A workflow has direct access to persistence, and it has its own database.
Oops. Yeah, I put that in there, didn't I? Oh, well.
It is in there, and you can... So the idea is the workflows would be persisted. It would include all of the aspects of, you know, what users there are, what roles they play.
Well, Ken, in that case, could I ask you to write a paragraph or two as to your understanding of what a workflow is, or this workflow module or package or whatever we want to call it, grouping?
Yeah, I'll make an attempt at getting at that.
But just a small thing. It doesn't have to be that expansive, because your notion of a workflow is more expansive than mine. And I want to make sure I understand it properly and correct my own thinking.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's always an issue. If you look at any of these registrar, find, inference, persistence, they internally have their own processes, right? So is that made explicit in the workflow process? Well, I'm not sure.
Well, this is what we want to clarify.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I think it's worth clarifying that.
Well, that's what this whole exercise is all about, right?
Right.
We already have our own notion, and obviously they don't all agree, unfortunately, so we want to make sure they agree and they make sense, and we can make more progress.
Mm-hmm.
Can I remind everyone we have 5 minutes, maybe less than 5 minutes, to 2 hours?
Okay. All right, so we're going to have to come to closure on a few things because we only have 5 minutes to go.
Right. I have one very important statement I want to make.
Go ahead.
I know we are a volunteer group, which means there's very little control over our progress. One thing I would hate to end up with is that, I mean, we forked from BioPortal. BioPortal is fully funded in multiple developers and so on, and they keep improving and debugging and making progress on their module. If we architect ourselves out of being able to leverage on their progress, I think it would be a bad move. So whatever we do with the architecture, if there's some way we could maintain a position whereby we continue to leverage their progress, I think that would be best. I mean, it is more easily said than done, I'm sure. But I think this is important.
Right.
I think Ken has already given us a foundation to do that, Peter.
Yes, I have. We're going to have to come to closure on a few of these things, but I think what I'll do is try to write up the questions that were still unanswered. And one of them was a nice suggestion. I think we could change the diagram just slightly. Right now, workflow uses administration. It should be the other way around. Administration uses workflow.
Administration uses... okay. I'll fix that right now.
So then it should go the other way. And then there's a question about, should presentation use find, or should it just use workflow? The problem with going directly to find is that now we have... There's no mechanism for enforcing a policy on who's allowed to access what. Because find doesn't have that.
Yeah, you don't want something independent of workflow, right?
Right. I think that link for presentation to find shouldn't be there.
Okay.
find an inference are just modules that are, they're not concerned at all with any kind of policy issues. There's no check to see if you're allowed to do what you're doing. You know, they're just concerned with doing the tasks, which are very difficult tasks, but, you know, and we should also have the ability to plug in different language representations. But by separating it like that, you know, we decouple the issue of language from the issue of the workflow and policy. So I think, other than that, I think this diagram is good. And we can go with it. And now, the next thing to look at is the actual API. And that gets into this issue that Peter just mentioned, kind of the homework for the next workshop we'll hold, is to look at that API. Does everybody have access to that? So the next workshop...
Can you type it up on the chat so that, I mean, we can capture that chat into the proceedings and...
Good point.
Yeah. And we don't have to guess.
I don't actually speak APR, so I'll probably set that one up.
Well, you know, we can still talk about the individual methods and what they do. That's the level we're talking about. We're not talking about the details of Java or Whistle.
Yeah, if we abstract them to a business requirements level of behavior and stuff.
Ken?
Yes?
I'm making some modifications to this diagram and the underlying information right now, and I'll forward that to you, hopefully, and I remember to send it the right XMI format.
Okay. Okay, so I posted this at the two places you can look, depending on your taste. Java or Whistle. And in line with what Peter just said, this is what we currently have in our sandbox and what Bow Portal uses. So if you look at the Java, I've actually classified the various methods, and in the next meeting we'll talk about what these things do and whether they're appropriate, what extensions we need, and of course, you know, how we manage to, you know, retain a connection with the with BioPortal work. So it's something like a 120 or so methods.
Okay. When will we have this? The API discussion.
Nothing has been scheduled yet. So
it hasn't been scheduled. Yeah. What's a good time for people?
Well, you have something. The metadata is coming up, right?
Yeah, in 2 weeks. If we want to make better progress, I mean, we could sort of do weekly calls instead of 2 week calls, every other week.
Next Friday.
That's one thought. I'm open. Now, I just have a feeling we're moving really, really slowly.
Okay, so we'll learn how to move faster, Peter. In the agile method, right?
Yeah. But once we approve,
I guess I would rather have more frequent meetings and maybe only an hour.
Okay. All right.
But again, you know, there's some that I won't be able to attend, so.
Let's make them one-hour meetings, and let's meet next Friday. Everybody agree to that?
Okay.
Okay. Friday is the 11th, right?
The 11th.
9 a.m.?
9 a.m.
We want to save Peter.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Well, yeah, I think it's good for me, at least as far as I know.
Okay, 9 a.m. then.
9 a.m. and...
So it's same time. 11.
Same time and...
Yep.
And can we identify a short agenda to constrain the discussions?
Let's do that over email. I guess you and Ken gets to make the call. How about that?
Ooh, power.
Okay. No, I think we'd be lucky if we could get through this entire API.
I don't expect that, but I mean, as we learn how to do this remotely and disjointly, I think we'll get better at it. Again, the biggest issue is to constrain the discussions and come to the particular decisions. Now, we may have to revisit those decisions, but okay.
Yeah, let's continue to discuss this over the OR forum so that at least, I mean, if we discuss it over there, more people will be attracted and they'll come. We definitely could use more hands, to say the least.
Yeah, although at the meeting itself, if we have too many people, it will start to slow down a lot. So let's try to handle this on the forum, okay?
Yep.
All right, so unless there's something urgent that we need to talk about right now, I think it's time that we adjourn.
Thank you. Great session.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.